Hey everyone, this is Rachel Mooney.
This is Cindy.
This is Maggie.
And this is Andrea. And you're listening to Real Her Talk, houses, heels, and real estate deals.
Okay. All right, so we're going to talk about like problems we've had to work through to get to closing tables. And Rachel and I have had this conversation, and it kind of stuck with me, is that our industry has been so good for so long in sunshine, roses, and butterflies, and we share all the happy photos at the end and people moving in, and that it's like people don't realize what it actually takes to get to that closing table so often. And even part of our job is to shield our clients from a lot of the chaos behind the scenes to try to minimize their stress. And so it is just the amount of things that can go wrong in a transaction that we've seen go wrong in transactions, and then how to navigate through that. I was like, okay, it's time to bust out some more stories, and the names will be changed to protect the guilty and innocent, if they're, you know, depends. And then we're not gonna give addresses or specifics or anything. And I just was like, there's just more that happens in this industry than anybody could possibly imagine. And so with the tenure and the amount of closings that happen between the four of us, I was like, I know we have some pretty good situations. And so I'll go first. Because this is the one of the ones that it never left me. Like, you know how there's one, like, few deals through the years that you just really are like, wow, this is why that is not a good practice. And it was probably 7.5, 8 years ago now, and a gentleman was buying a house, and he needed temporary occupancy before closing. So the buyer was wanting to move in before he actually closed on the house. And the sellers had already moved out, so they said that was fine. And he moved in with his wife and the stepdaughter. So the kids were not his, they were hers, but they all moved together and together. Now, but the only purchaser is him. So the contract is with him. And a week, 5 to 7 days before closing, he gets killed in a car accident. And so now you have an entire family who is now dealing with a very untimely loss of a family member, because he was not, I mean, the guy was in his mid-40s. This was not, you know, somebody in their 80s or 90s even. This was like very untimely. So the family is grieving. We represented the seller. And unfortunately, now the seller, who still needs to sell the home, has people that now live in the home, and there's no contract with that person. What a mess. And so, and it's nothing anybody could predict. Now let's domino through this, right? So technically, and this has happened before as well, we had it this not terribly long ago, another situation where we represented the buyer, and the buyer's actually were murdered, and they were under contract to buy a house. Well, there's no provision in a real estate contract if somebody dies that they're not in default and everything just gets terminated. That's not how contracts work. So buyer will inevitably default because they cannot show up for closing. I know this sounds very crass, but this is the reality of the legalities behind this. And so the buyer couldn't go to the closing because he had been killed in a car accident. And so they had to wait for the default to happen. Then the seller could terminate the contract. Then they had to go through the process, because earnest money does not necessarily just immediately go back to, you can let all of you stuff can edit this out. So if it jumps, you guys will know why. Hey. I didn't know if you were watching me. We're at, we'll edit it out. I'm like, stuff can edit. Yeah. So what happens is then the earnest money goes to the party who didn't default. Well, the wife wanted it because she's like, well, now we have to move out. Now we have all these additional expenses, which again, empathy, you understand that. And yet that's not how contracts are written. So then they refuse to leave the house.
Squatters.
Now you have squatters. Mm-hmm. And whether you realize it or not, they have rights. You can't just call the police and have them thrown out. That's not how it works. So then the seller had to go through an entire eviction process to get them to actually formally leave the house. And so now that is a very extreme example, obviously, of why letting buyers move in early beforehand is a huge risk. Mostly it's usually damage to the house, things that can go wrong. However, we can't guarantee outcomes, and the impact that that alone had on that family, I am positive, was very traumatic. And the impact financially it had on the seller was very big, because they had already moved out. So now they have two mortgages and have to pay to go through an eviction process, which is also not free. And all they had was the earnest money, which was like $2,500 or $3,000. I can't even begin to tell you that that did not cover their expenses even a little bit. So there was literally no winners in that whole scenario. And yet we had to help, because we represented the seller, we had to help that seller navigate that process, tell them, you know, here, you know, this is what the contract says. You're probably going to have to talk to an attorney, because obviously we're not facilitating an eviction process. And it was probably 6 to 8 months before we could get that house back on the market.
Jeez.
Yeah. And so just being aware that time and unforeseen occurrences can happen no matter with the best laid plans. And I have a few more, but that was really, that one never, that has always stuck with me, because you really couldn't foresee any of that.
Yeah,
no, you couldn't see it coming. There was nothing that the agent could have done differently or better, or literally anything to be like, okay, well, here's how you prevent that in the future.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, that there was no like, wow, you did a bad job. Mm-hmm. It was more like, this is just all bad. It is all bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
karma.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yes, all right, so who else has something?
I don't, well, maybe along the lines of that, but something that I didn't think about that I, sometimes I'm thankful for my husband, Joe, and also for everybody else, but you know, we're investors and so we flip. And back in 2020, it was pre-COVID, we had bought a house in the town we lived in, great house. I think we bought it off, like somebody was wholesaling it. Bought it from them. It was probably one of my favorite kind of flips that we did. I remember going into the first time and like a rat, but it was probably like a mouse. Like we were standing in the kitchen with our partners and like this, like she starts screaming and I'm like, what? You know, anyways, but we got it flipped, ready to go. And then COVID hits. Anyways, it was just, when it went on market, it was just not the best time. On top of that, it ended up being like a domino, one of those domino effects that, and I think it was like three or four.
Well, explain what you mean by that.
So this was our flip. So we listed it. The buyers were contingent on their house selling, and they had a contract that was contingent on their house selling. Sorry, I have gum in my mouth. Maybe I should take that out. Anyways, and so... it was like two or three contracts back. Well, two things. The first one was the very first contract that basically was the domino that needed to fall. The buyer of, I guess, that house or something like that, it was his, something was going on with his lender, and his agent.
I love how she looked at him.
Lender.
Yeah.
But this is the thing. It was, I don't know what kind of lender it was. Not a lender that communicates, but then the agent was only doing the bare minimum. So then Joe, who is four, you know, over here as owner and agent of his own property,
he is having to call that lender, y'all, three contracts back to try to figure out what's going on. And I remember it was like, basically, I think he ended up sending the guy to another lender of ours that we knew, like got it to close. I mean, I think it may have been Jacob. I can't remember. It's been several years, 4 years. Anyway, so that was one thing that was crazy. So literally have nothing to do with buyer over there, but you're helping because of that. Because, I mean, it's...
It impacts your income, or, well, outcome.
Yeah. And, I mean, as owners, like the investors, we needed that sold.
Yeah.
Well, we ended up allowing our people to occupy prior to closing, and it had a pool. And I remember, like, Joe not wanting to do the, like, the, not letting them, like, occupy prior to closing, because he's like, that's too much of a risk. And I was like, it's not really. But he's like, yeah, it is. And I thought, you know what? Yeah, it is. And so I'll never forget that. So, like, I'm like, if you ever have a contract that has a pool and you're allowing someone to get into it prior to closing, like, make sure you have something in the contract that you are not liable for, like, someone drowning or something happen. But it's like little things of, like, I don't think of that are not in a contract that you have to add. And so it's, you know, again, why you should have representation that knows what they're doing. So, you know, I thought that was kind of cool. But yeah, that was something maybe creative that we had to do. But then, and also contracts and how they don't necessarily cover everything, and you might be liable for something.
Yeah,
that's true.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like a pool. And then at that point, if somebody broke in through a fence and got in and drowned, who's liable then too?
Right.
Like there's so much with that. Like
scary.
It's scary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it was COVID and nobody was at school. Everybody wanted to swim.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Kids wanted, you know, and it was just one of those. And we're like, okay, we'll just, you know, they did fine for us. But yeah.
Nuts.
It was crazy.
All right, yeah. Sunny, which got?
Well, I'm the money person, so I don't have any people's squatting in a house or anything like that. I've been in the business a long time. I do remember that it wasn't my closing, but I went to an attorney's, and before you had to explain this today to an ex-wife, why she has to show her photo ID. Is because I was sitting at a closing and all of a sudden there's a lot of shouting and stuff going on, and actually it was during the refinance, and the wife that was signing it was the girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yes. And so I say that is exactly why we want your driver's license, because we want to know the person that's signing the quit claim deed is in fact you, and somebody's not taking your house away from you. So things like that. Mine are all giant puzzles on, okay, this is what I've got, and how do I craft this into a mortgage? Because I was just doing that today. There were three or four options, and maybe this person could go on the loan, maybe this person shouldn't be on the loan, and you've been doing all kinds of scenarios and go, okay, here's the best and the easiest way. If not, then here's the second, third, fourth option.
Yeah, but you guys are still solving problems. Like, I mean, let's say an appraisal comes in low.
Well, there's not as much saving that deal as pulling in different people to try to show that that is not an accurate appraisal. But there are very little I do other than pray.
Sure, but you gotta know who to pull in. I mean, you guys, you're understating how much
you do.
You do on to keep deals together.
Yes, I'm very good at bubblegum and tape to keep a loan together until... But it's not the same, not even close to the same at the end of the day. Yes, they may not get the mortgage they like. They may have to go to a different mortgage. But we're not talking about funerals.
Well, hopefully we're not that
off.
I know. Yeah, we should
not that grim. right.
Yeah, you led with that. I did. And then where are we going to go from there? Yeah.
No, yeah. And it's like, I have so many war stories, but then too, like, you got to remember, like, now at this point, I've got the war stories of, like, times 300 because yeah. I get the stuff
everybody
like
else.
Everybody else yeah. is. And so, yeah, it's, well, yeah.
I also find that there have been some deals that I just could not sleep at night.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it's funny. It's like childbearing.
Mm-hmm.
After it's over, you kind of forget the pain involved in it, and you're just waiting for the next. So for mine, I really like the whole thing is the big puzzle on how I can make this deal work.
But what if people aren't truthful with you up front? Like, I know that happens. I've seen it.
Oh.
they paint a picture for you. It's sunshine, roses, and butterflies.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But then these days, in the old days, it was harder to determine somebody was being untruthful. I'm trying to use all the good words, untruthful. But now, it's not that it doesn't happen, but it is really hard with all the different tools and access we have to. Yeah, technology has changed. It made it.
So what? How fast can you check like tax returns, credit reports? Income verifications, because I mean, literally
12 seconds on credit reports, literally. And on tax returns, yes, probably 24 hours we can get a tax return. You've got to get them to sign that you can get the tax return.
Sure.
We're not trying to break any laws, but yes. Income even now is easier to get. Now calculating it is somewhat still a complicated thing because you may have to get two or three tax years together. And but yeah, I'm not making it. Being a loan officer is really hard work because you are never off. Not one day are you ever off. If you're going to be a good one, you cannot let somebody go to voicemail, and if they do, you need to call them back in 5 minutes or
because of impatient.
Yeah,
we're impatient, but also like there's so much panic.
Yes
around the financial piece because we're not, that's not our expertise. So like
when we're trusting them with timelines of the contract,
yes,
appraisal and finance have to be done within a certain period of time,
right?
So if we're not having constant conversations with our loan officer, we're in panic mode of going, okay, are we going to even hit this timeline?
Right.
We need to amend the contract. The agent's probably not going to let us. And,
yes.
You know, all the things.
You go down that slippery slope when you really don't have to if you have a lender that's going to communicate with you.
Right.
Yeah.
And I would probably say that if I see something's wrong, I'm going to pick it up before the phone up before you. And I've got to balance it but say, okay, this is not the easiest one, but I've got some options, so I'll let you know because I don't, you know.
Yeah, because think about it. I mean, what you just said, how many different timelines are we all dependent on? It's not us. We have to watch the dates, make sure that it all gets done on time, but we're not the ones
that are making sure that it's...
You still have a home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you think about it, even the inspection, getting the inspector out there, we don't control those schedules. We don't control when the appraisal goes out. We can't control when underwriting is done, right? Like, so for us, it is very...
Mm-hmm.
And because I work for who I work for now, those things don't ever really come up. That's the reason I stay so long with this company or the companies that I stay with, because I don't have to worry about can I get somebody on the phone. I don't even have to worry because everybody that works with my company, whether or not they're like a subcontractor or not, knows what the rules are and they play by those rules and the service, then I can give the best service too.
I mean, and that's fair because we all see that is not necessarily the case.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, no.
Yeah, I mean, okay, seriously. Like, when you see
I'm not going to try to throw anybody in particular under the bus, but you'll see a co-op agent. You already know that that brokerage is like, oh no, they're not known for training. They're not known for making sure their agents know what they're doing. So that starts you off going, oh no. Then you see it's Bob's lender, who you know is a broker who has no contact. They're just farming it out. So there's no control of any kind. Mm-hmm. And then you see that it's like, the contract is missing stuff. The forms are missing stuff. And you're going, oh no, I'm about to have to do my job and their job. Mm-hmm. And everybody in between, you just already know it's not going to end that well. And that's experience. Mm-hmm. Have y'all ever been proved totally wrong by that? Like, it shows up like that and it's been a great...
No. It's always extra work and a bad experience. And you kind of know it from the beginning. Based off that offer that comes in,
yeah.
You know it's like, okay, this is going to be tough to work through. It's just, yeah, you have to prepare yourself for that.
Yeah.
And make sure our processes are super buttoned up and that we're on top of what we need to be on top of in order for things to not fall through the cracks and get us right before closing with a big issue.
A lot of times it's the client, really. It's not whether the appraiser is going to bring it in and what do we do after that, but like it's really hard if you've done it for a long time to try to get in the mindset of your client, because you will ask a question like, they haven't provided you the divorce decree. I said, okay, so this is what your cash out needs to be for. Is there any other obligation in this divorce decree that I should know of or that you're obligated to do? And this just happened. No. Well, it ended up, they either had to bring $30,000 more out of the cash out, or you count an extremely high child support. So you go, okay, I can do this. I should do the math. Mm-hmm. Oh, the child support part's not going to work, right? So then to explain to your client that taking $30,000 out now is much easier and cost-effective for you because your house payment's only going to go up X versus the amount that you're going to have to pay for child support. I just had that conversation. Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
But we had a plan. See, that's the thing. I had an option. It's when you don't have any options that it's, I hate saying sadly and unfortunately, and that's what you have to do is say sadly. We can't do this yet.
Yeah.
Say yet.
Yet. Mm-hmm. We're just not there yet.
Yes. Yeah. So stick with me and we'll come up with a plan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's good. All right, Rachel, war story.
The only one that comes to mind is the one that happened at Christmas time. Was it with a quiet action title?
Mm-hmm. That's good. Which, yeah, you pulled out a few stops on that one.
Pulled out some stops on that one. And being in real estate for so long, I didn't even really know what quiet. I mean, I probably learned it in school at one moment.
I don't think that was in real estate school. I swear to you, I do not think it. And let me tell you.
I don't know what.
I was going to say, I would be surprised if Maggie or Cindy knows. And I know that our listeners do not. So explain what that is, because you called me and you're like, are you familiar? Or you may have texted me that. And I was like,
yeah.
Ironically, yes.
Yeah.
But not frequent. What is happening?
Yeah.
So yeah, go ahead.
So I was representing the seller in a neighborhood here locally. And he had bought this house pre-recession years ago, like 2007, Well, there was a lot next door to his property that was vacant, and it had a tax. It was a tax sale, so he bought it as a tax sale years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't know, he paid $1,500 for it or something, you know, because he didn't want anybody to live next door. Well, we get his house under contract. I'm representing the seller. The closing attorney, which was the buyer's closing attorney, so it wasn't anybody that I was familiar with, which was kind of like a Bob Joe countryman.
Always so rough.
And the lender's calling, and or the agent, she's like, listen, we're trying to get title. I'm like, okay, is, figure out what's going on with your closing attorney. And the attorney, we finally got in touch with the attorney, closing attorney, and this was like 5 days prior to closing, and right around Christmas time. So we finally get in touch with him. They say, well, your seller didn't do what was right, and you had to file a quiet action title. And I was like, well, what does that even mean? Like, I've never even heard of this, quiet action title. Well, apparently, if you buy a piece of property in the state of Georgia, and I don't know if it's any other state, but here in the state of Georgia, if you buy a piece of property as a tax sale, you have to have it, you have to have the, it basically giving notification to all parties everywhere that this thing is being sold. And that that notification goes out into the public, and it's there for a period of time. And somebody can come along and say, hey, no, that's my piece of property. You know, we're not interested in selling it, or that's my dad's property, or whatever. So it's basically like giving notice that this piece of property is being sold. Well, when he bought the property back in a recession for the tax sale, he used an attorney in North Georgia who skipped that entire process because they didn't think they had to do that. And so when I brought it to him, I'm like, listen, you were supposed to have a quiet action title done. We don't have the appropriate title. It can't be attached to the title of the house. It's two different deeds. Mm-hmm. We can't do this. And he was in such an uproar because he was determined that he had done everything right, because he thought he did everything right. Years ago, he went through the process, what he thought was accurate, to get this.
And hired an attorney.
And
to his credit.
Yes.
He didn't just try to, like, figure it out himself.
Yeah, no. He hired an attorney. The attorney said that they did everything. And so I had to literally go back and chase down that attorney, which was still around. I had to go back and chase down that attorney to figure out why they didn't. But then we had to, this takes us all the way up until, like, 24 hours to closing. We didn't even know if we were closing or not, because title hadn't been approved, and back over to the, you know, to the underwriter, and everything checked off. So we were literally chasing, trying to figure out how could we get this done prior to closing. And everybody was saying, it's 6, 7, 8 months process. Like, it's not a quick, easy fix. You have to go through the appropriate measures to get this done. And so all in all, after it was consuming, we finally came to an agreement that it was going to cost about $1,500 to do it. And so my seller had to come out additional $1,500 to get to closing, to give to the buyer, so the buyer could take over and do that at closing. Yeah,
because when we talked, you were like, what are the options? I was like, well, it's separate, because it was two different pieces of property, but then the loan had been completely done
on the
full amount.
Yes, and the appraisal was done on the full amount. That's the only thing that actually held it together.
Yeah, because otherwise it was just like, we'll just chunk it. Mm-hmm. Because you can sell the house separately, but then we couldn't, because then you were right back starting over again with appraisal, underwriting, everything. And so, yeah, it was
nerve-wracking. And again, I was like, I've never even heard of this. What, in 25 years in the business, you think that you've heard of everything and you know all the situations? And when they threw it at me, I'm like, I don't even know what y'all are talking about. Like, this is not even a, now moving forward, anybody, right? Learning lesson is, did you buy a piece of property on a tax sale? And then did you go through the appropriate measures? Because this is something we're going to have to jump moving forward.
Yeah. And even when you do, because when you do the quiet action title, what actually happens too, is they have actually a certain amount of time, even after you've purchased the property and the tax sale, to come back, pay you off, you get made whole, and you get like a interest, but they have a certain amount of time. And so there's a process, and that's where that advertising and everything comes in, because you can't just quietly
whisper it
and be like,
I think I've heard of it.
Didn't know when or where,
but like the whole process sounds familiar. Like, you have to advertise it, but again, I don't know why.
But
I have heard of it before.
But people do buy things at tax sales. Yeah. Like, it's not that it's completely uncommon, but the
Georgia happens all
process
the time.
Is pretty extensive, and it's not a it's like they said, it's like months it has, and then they, even after you've done the quiet title, they have X amount of years that they can even come back. So like, it's not like totally done I think until like 2 years after you've gone through the process. Don't quote me on timelines, but it's pretty extensive.
Wow.
Don't build anything on it.
No. Yes. Yeah.
That
yeah,
is correct. Don't do that. So yeah, no.
But now it's
rough.
Done.
It's
like,
done.
Now she, the new seller won't have to, or the buyer.
Yeah.
Well, as long
now.
As the buyer does the process and does
okay.
it correctly and goes through
everything. With getting it sold.
So will it always have to do that? So every, no, so
just
once,
one time.
One time. Okay.
Yeah.
Per property. Per
yeah.
property.
Mm-hmm.
Not per, like, person that owns it.
Yeah.
No,
property,
but per time, like if that same property got
another tax lien,
another,
started,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
it would be another process. But yeah,
mm-hmm.
so yeah, that was,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I was like, yep, yeah, that's above our pay grade. That's called
yeah.
attorneys, and somebody made a mess somewhere along the line.
And I don't know that if I wouldn't have gone through like starting to jump those hoops, I don't think the other parties would have done it. I think she would have backed out. I think she would have told her buyer, just
mm-hmm.
back out. This is too messy. It's never going to be sold. Let's find another house.
Mm-hmm.
They can't convey title.
They can't convey title and all the things. But because I was so progressive with it and just trying to figure out what we needed to do. Because to me, it's like a puzzle, too.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always like, okay, I got to figure this out. With the divorced one that my client lost the $5,000
mm-hmm.
on a few months ago, it was the same thing with her divorce decree. The underwriters came back and they're like, hey, we need a copy of that. Well, the lender is like, well, you're just gonna have to wait until it comes in from the judge, right? And we're just gonna have to wait for the process. I'm like, wait a minute, no, what county is this in, and where do we go? So I picked up the phone, called, got a guy on the phone. He's like, actually, it's right here. I can make a copy of it. I called my client. I go, listen, get down there and get it before 5:00 p.m. and let's get this thing over to the attorney's office or to the underwriters. But it's being proactive and aggressive,
right.
I think, to work through the puzzle pieces to get it to closing.
I think that's what makes a good agent great. Well, in any profession, like, are you willing to problem solve versus stop? And I think there's probably a solution to most of your problems. Are you willing to push through to find that solution
yeah.
or not? I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's, and I think that's why it's so important to work with the right professionals in any industry that are willing to go above and beyond what is either expected or what they want to do, because it is so easy for someone just to be like, oh, this is too hard. Let's
yeah.
go over here and find
right.
something else. Let's terminate. It'll be easier versus like, you taking it, like Joe, had he not like pushed all the way down there, you know? So I think it really is important quality to have. That like, bring me a solution, don't bring me a problem.
Well, yeah.
I tell my kids, I'm like, don't
yes.
bring me a problem, be a problem
yeah.
solver. Like, bring me a solution and then, okay.
Well, there's a 30,000 foot view, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, you've got to be willing to look at it up here and say, okay, this is the outcome we need to happen. Get rid of the egos and the emotions and everything. That's our job, is put all that set of stuff aside and say, what is my client trying to do? My client needs to get to the closing table. How do we get them there? Because
mm-hmm.
I always jump off the cliff when I'm like, what's the principle of the matter? No, it's not.
No.
You're in the way.
Yeah.
You're not helping your client get the outcome
yeah.
they want.
Mm-hmm.
You're literally in the way.
Yeah.
Because you're like, well, I don't like that they didn't say this right or do this right, and now we have this problem. Yeah, you do have a problem. It's life. We all have problems.
Mm-hmm.
Solve it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the other one I was like, I want to make sure and share, because this goes directly to representation. And I think this was the scariest thing I've seen, in the sense of, I've seen a lot of stuff. I've seen people try to attempt mortgage fraud. I have.
So
have I. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
I had a broker owner get into an argument with me about why it was totally fine that there was two contracts and one went to the lender and
mm-hmm.
one did not. And I was like, yeah, we don't do that here. Mm-hmm. We don't do that. That's nice. And she was like, you people. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah, us people with ethics and that.
Yeah.
Are going to not commit mortgage fraud, you're right.
And
we are those
love
people.
Love our job and
uh-huh.
keep our license.
And don't
yes.
want to go to jail. So
yeah.
thank you.
Yeah.
Check, check, check.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, but the scariest thing I ever saw on the client side was new construction. I was on site. So it was I represented the builder.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a county in Georgia, and there's quite a few that are still like this, and it's very much a good old boy system. Mm-hmm. And to get any documents, building permits, certificate of occupancies, I mean, any kind of, like, your inspectors come out, we had to have a runner that had a relationship with the correct people at the county, and you paid him in cash to be your runner.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't bribery. It was, he was the designated runner of choice for this county. It had to be in cash. Okay. So what had happened is that we had quite a few COs that needed to be issued back to back, and they hadn't paid the runner enough to do all of those.
To run all of them.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And get all the stamps in time. So the builder had their preferred attorney, which of course closed everything. And the builder, I typically did, most new construction, nobody goes to closing on the builder side. Typically, it's just the buyer and the buyer's agent. You know, you're looking through everything. But I would go to closing at least half the time because it was a much smaller builder. And so sometimes, logistically, somebody had to be there. So I would go about half the time. And yeah, there was a closing and we didn't have CO. And he closed it anyways. Now, here's what's terrifying about this is that legally, so I refused to go to closing. I was like, I will not show up. I'm not responsible for receiving those documents, filing those, I'm getting any of that. But I also know that we don't have it for this particular part, so I will not go. I will not lie. I will not sign a dadgum thing. I will not do that. I will not go. And so the attorney knew, because that certificate of occupancy was not in that file, which they do have to provide a copy of the certificate of occupancy to the buyer. Buyers do not know this. Well, here's why this is so important. Because the buyers went, purchased the home, closed on it. They go and move their stuff in. If anyone had driven by and seen that, they would have been thrown out of their own house. They can't even move so much as a pair of shoes in there. And you would have gotten it, it's not like condemned, but it's like you would be prevented from entering your own home that now you have clothes on, you own, and you have no right to live there per the county government. Now, what I will say is that the CO came in before 5 o'clock that day. Those buyers closed on a house that had a certificate of occupancy. They never knew. And I was like, I will not be a part of this.
Yeah.
And it wasn't very much longer I parted ways with that builder because, but what buyers don't understand is they think that, okay, it's easier for new construction, my agent, it's not quite as much work. Sure. And new construction, let me tell you, those permit inspections, you need a pre-drywall inspection. You, just because they've got even a certificate of occupancy doesn't mean that everything was built to code.
Right.
Doesn't mean that there's not mold in your walls. Doesn't mean there's so many things that can be hidden from inspectors, or there could be runners involved that are getting paid. And there's been plenty of instances. I mean, my goodness, go Google like county officials that went to jail over all kinds of stuff. If you think that doesn't go on,
oh, it does.
You're very naive. Because it does. So having somebody that's like, just that. I mean, could you imagine that agent, and they had an agent, didn't check, didn't ask, didn't even know that that was a process, whatever. You literally could have owned a house, and it was a, let me be clear too. This was back in 2004, 2005. This was a $650,000 house. This is not a $200,000 house, $250,000 house. This is a $650,000 house which today they sell for over $1 million, and you now paid over $1 million for a house that you are literally barred from walking into. You tell me that having the right agent doesn't matter. And I watched that happen and was just wanted to vomit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And prayed the other agent was going to do her job, and she did not.
She didn't. She just assumed that the builder.
Sure.
Everything was given. And she assumed that the attorney had what they needed in order to close.
Sure.
And the lender didn't do their job.
I know. I was like, lender
should know that too. Yeah.
Maybe they use a preferred lender.
Yeah, preferred closing attorney.
There you go. So the only representation you have in that, which y'all are giggling about because it's true, you go on site, they have their attorney, they have their preferred lenders, and those preferred lenders, it's that account, and those loan officers under it, everything is assigned. So that person's livelihood is tied to that account.
Mm-hmm.
And you think that there's not some sort of loyalty there? Come on.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So yeah, tell me that you don't need representation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's, it, like I said, it was not a cheap, junky house.
No.
Yeah.
And that's a story that needs to get out to everybody.
Yeah, and I'm careful with that story. I mean, now, I mean, like I'm telling on a podcast, but I would never name names, and that builder is no longer in business. Because they went out during the recession, but yeah, no, it had nothing to do with them getting caught.
Oh, well, never mind.
No, so I mean, that kind of stuff, there's so much shady stuff that happens on that side of it. Your representation does matter. And we know personally, locally, where there are agents that their whole business model is just to walk in, be there to write the contract, and then they never go back, and they just go to closing and pick up a check.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hope there's no easements on your property that could cause problem later. Hope that there's no permitting issue. Good luck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right now, my house cleaner, she's amazing. I don't even want to say she's my house cleaner because she's like the woman should be sainted. Like, she's just
She does your laundry and everything. You've
got
a good
one. She
does
my laundry.
A really good one.
She'll offer to cook us dinner.
No, I need to have her name.
She has one slot open.
Does she?
Right now, if you want her. She's amazing.
Yeah.
Literally amazing. And so she bought new construction, and now I won't say this is the agent's fault because there's no way they could have known, but it had a big retaining wall, and it has now, the drainage, and the builder's like, yep, not my problem, sorry that your whole house is about to fall out over, feels like a you problem, not an us problem.
Signed somewhere along in those documents,
in
the warranty information, they skimmed through for
2.5 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, homeowner's insurance doesn't cover that.
No. And those retaining walls are expensive.
Yes.
Very expensive to put back.
Yeah. So anyways, okay, so what other good stories? I was like, I know that was a doozy. That mine sucked the life out of the room. They're like, these are funny ones.
Yeah.
Okay, I got a good one then that's funny. A buyer insists on going with the inspector up into the attic.
Oh, we just had one of these.
Mm-hmm. Insisted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fell through.
Fell through, but she fell through over the beam, so her legs went like this and were dangling through the ceiling like this. Best part is she terminates the contract because the home is damaged.
Oh gosh, because she damaged it.
And then she wanted her earnest money back. And here is another side note. You cannot deduct repairs needed from what the buyer damages out of the earnest money. You have to go after that separately. So yeah, fell through the ceiling, but then wouldn't close. At least yours closed.
Yes, ours closed, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they fell through the warning of the walkthrough.
Yeah.
Right through.
Wow.
Right through that thing.
I don't know.
And the listing agent was out of her office. Thank goodness.
So. Yeah, because you guys made it work. You're like, it's okay.
Yeah.
We got this.
Figure this out.
No, we did take a picture of the ladies.
That was the honest closing, though.
You
didn't
even know.
I did not know.
Yeah.
It's better I don't know, because literally, if I know, we're lending on...
Right.
Yeah.
There's leg holes.
Yeah.
Oh, my favorite. Let's talk about this for a second. When an agent decides to attach an inspection report to
a request for repairs and it's like, see, inspection report. You guys are like, why did you just do this?
Yeah. And that's why I'm a little OCD about my stuff, because if I have an assistant, but that assistant is also the owner's of the company's assistant, and she's very, very busy. I mean, I don't even know how she breathes. And so I tend to micromanage my loans, and I'm lectured a lot about that. But then again, that's something you cannot not see anymore.
Right.
Yeah, you can't unsee that. And we had, it's not my loan, but there was another loan just this week. And we did not need the tax returns. All we needed is the tax transcripts.
Okay.
So we got the tax transcripts, but early in the process, an assistant is just uploading the documents as they come in. So it was still in the file, and as our lovely, lovely underwriter says, I just can't unsee something. And it happened to have, she had started a small business or something on one of the last pages, and she had a $14,000 loss. So.
Which is probably on purpose.
Yeah.
No, it's a loss, sure.
Yeah.
Yes, but that's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's not like it would have necessarily financially hurt the loan.
Yeah.
No, it was for tax purposes.
I do, if I can, and I know somebody's self-employed or whatever, I want to have just a 15-minute conversation ahead of time, maybe even if they're building a house or something like that, that you have, lots of times you have a choice. Do you want that house, or do you want the tax reduction that you're going to? Which one do you want?
Because you can't have them both.
Because you cannot write everything off and say, oh, I only made this amount IRS. And then go to a quasi-government agency and go, just kidding.
Yeah.
JK.
Yeah. So, and sometimes that's when I say I hold hands, because sometimes if you can catch it at the right time and they have good credit, where you're praying that they only need one most recent tax return, then we can make that magic happen, because file your tax return early and don't get uberly aggressive, and
you're okay.
Then we'll. Time is, sometimes time, like in new construction, so time is your friend, especially when self-employed. I love you self-employed people, but come on.
We are trouble.
We are trouble.
We are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, when we first were self-employed, I mean, but yeah, kicked in the teeth, taxes the first year we made a decent amount of money, because we were a self, like, proprietorship or whatever it was.
Sole
proprietorship. And so then, like, we showed no income, which we had. I mean, it was crazy. Like, we ended up having to buy the first house as, like, just business, like, whatever, owners. We bought as a lease to purchase from a sweet lady. And she had gotten a divorce. She's moving with her daughter. And we actually ended up flipping it. She knew we were going to flip it. It was a live-in flip. And I remember her telling us, I hope you make a lot of money when you flip it. And she ended up passing away the following year. But we ended up doing a lease to purchase with her. And Joe had just become an agent. Like, I think it was a year he became an agent. So he got licensed in April. And I think we lease purchased in November. And then we had to go through, like, just alternate lending with a very high interest rate.
Yeah.
Once, like, we were at a year, I think they let us. But it was a
that
hot mess.
Sense.
And I mean, our interest rate was probably, I mean, it was high.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, I think it was like 9 or something. I know, not, but like at the time, you know. And so we,
Yeah, so we ended up doing that, and I remember the first time we were actually able to do conventional. we were like, yes! But we just didn't know. We were young, and we owned our own business for years. We, you know, and so, you
know. It's not our own property.
Yeah. It is, but now we know how to adjust our taxes, what to have LLCs, to have, like, what you have to be in and how your taxes need to look so that you can show income, so that you can buy properties and buy a car or whatever you need to do, right? And so, yeah, we definitely needed a class on taxes and how to set yourself up to actually own.
They don't teach any of that
in high school, so.
They don't teach you anything that you actually need in high school.
Olivia didn't even know how to write a check.
No, they don't teach that.
Isn't it writing? Yeah. Oh, no, an envelope. Was it you to address an envelope?
Yeah, we're good. We're done.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.